So when I was a kid, I wanted to be lots of things when I grew up. For a while, I wanted to live in the woods and study wolves. I wanted to be Dana Scully, or at least a forensic scientist. I went through a pretty big astronaut phase until I discovered that I was too short and that my eyesight sucked. So I was really into science in school, but at the same time, I was also an editor of our high school's Art Lit magazine. And in the summers, I was a counselor at a creative arts camp where I taught kids creative writing, photography, and how to make sculptures out of trash. Most of my friends in high school and at camp were some combination of artists, musicians, theater kids, and stoners. So when I told them that I was going to Cornell to study science, they were all a little bit confused. I guess as a teenager, I never really knew how to reconcile those two parts of myself, and so they just kind of existed independently of each other. So when I got to Cornell, I took a bunch of different science classes, and after a few semesters, I settled in the earth sciences as my home, a place where I was really excited about learning how the earth worked. So the winter of my junior year, I had the opportunity over winter term to take a 3-week field course in Hawaii. This was an interdisciplinary earth system science course. And the course was run by a lecturer in the Cornell Geology Department named Alex Moore. Alex was the first female scientist I ever met whose life I wanted. Dana Scully was pretty cool, but she was a workaholic who had a dysfunctional relationship with a guy who always called her by her last name. Alex, on the other hand, lived in a cool old farmhouse on the outside of town with her partner, who was also a professor at Cornell, their two girls, and their ancient golden retriever. They had a garden and a pond and a seemingly never-ending supply of excellent French red wine, which they shared with their students. I remember being at the house for her 40th birthday party, and Lou brought out a shovel with a bright red bow on it. Not jewelry, not chocolates, not even a kitchen appliance, a shovel. And in that moment, I thought to myself, you know, there's more than one way to be an adult woman. You can be a scientist and a mother and appreciate farm implements as birthday presents. So our trip to Hawaii that winter got off to a rough start because there was a snowstorm. We missed our flight out of Syracuse. It's all a shock to you. There was a snowstorm. And so Alex had to send 12 students off on different itineraries across the country and over the Pacific Ocean, hoping that we would all end up in Honolulu at about the same time. And this is pre-cell phone era. Hard to imagine, but none of us had cell phones, including Alex. Now, I have traveled internationally with students at Williams, and I can tell you that I have no idea how she kept it together, because I would have lost it. But she kept her cool, and I managed to keep my cool, too, after an anxious night at an airport hotel in Cincinnati. And we all ended up in Honolulu at around the same time, and were able to start our trip. So the most remarkable part of the trip for me was spent on the island of Hawaii, which is just called the Big Island. And the Big Island is the only place where active volcanism is still taking place. All of the other islands have moved slowly off of the Hawaiian hotspot where magma is rising up from the core mantle boundary and piercing the crust. So those islands are slowly eroding away into the sea. But the Big Island is still growing. In fact, as we speak right now, there's active lava flowing across the surface of the Big Island of Hawaii. I checked. It's not always flowing. So that was the place where we were going to be spending a lot of our time. In addition to learning about geology, we also learned a lot about Hawaiian culture. And the part of that that was most interesting to me was learning about Hawaiian gods, the deities. There are thousands of Hawaiian gods, but the one that is most well-known and sort of most famous and most important to the Hawaiian people is Pele. And Pele is the goddess of fire, of lava, and of birth and creation. And legend says that if you take anything from the islands without presenting an offering to Pele, misfortune will fall upon you. So when you get to the Honolulu airport, there's this big case of pieces of coral and rock and shell with postcards attached to them, people have sent back after breaking legs and losing jobs and getting divorces after coming back from Hawaii. So Alex had prepared us for this. She said, if you want to take back a piece of freshly cooled lava, which of course we did because we were geology students, you need to sacrifice something to Pele. So this was sort of on our minds. So the first night we got to near where the active lava flows were, we were staying in a condo, and we'd gotten in kind of late, and us students were all kind of hanging out in the living room, relaxing, taking a bit of a breather. And around 10 o'clock at night, Alex bursts into the living room. She says, "Who wants to go see the lava flows now?" And we had all thought we would just go the next day. But no, Alex wanted to go right then. We all sort of turned and looked at her, and none of us had the guts to say that we would rather stay in the condo and watch the real world, so we got all our stuff together and our headlamps and our boots and piled into the minivans and drove out to the access point. Now, the access point is basically the place where the lava has most recently flown over the road. So you basically drive to the end of the road, and then there's just, like, lava. So we pile out of the vans, put on our headlamps, walk past the bright orange caution do not enter signs, like all good geology students do, and started walking across the flows to the active site. Now, if you've never walked across recently cooled lava, it's basically like walking across thin sheets of glass that break every time you step on them. And it doesn't flow smoothly. It flows in big waves and ridges. So you're in the dark, walking across black rocks, picking your way through these ridges of glass. It's definitely not the most relaxing hiking that I've ever done, but the fact that we were walking towards active lava made it all worth it. I just think it probably wasn't the type of experience that our friends back in freezing Ithaca thought that we were having. I remember feeling like I was on some sort of mythical quest, this dark night and the dark rocks, and we were walking towards the one place on Earth where you could see new crust being created. I remember that we were all really quiet as we walked, all lost in our own thoughts and also probably trying not to fall on our faces. So after what felt like a couple of hours, but was probably 45 minutes, we made it to the active flows, and it changed my life. You walk in the darkness, and all of a sudden, you see these glowing orange, red, pulsing colors in front of you, and you walk closer, and there's molten rock flowing across the surface of the earth, radiating heat and light and color. We laughed, we ran across recently cooled flows and melted the bottoms of our boots. The boys all peed into the flows and sent up big clouds of steam, while the rest of us girls were like, "Oh, why? And we all felt that we were in the presence of Pele. So the next day, we went back a little bit earlier in the evening. And this time, we were prepared to take lava with us. So we had rock hammers and thick, thermally insulated gloves and a heat shield, sort of like one of those things that riot police use. And because we were preparing to take lava with us, we had to prepare our sacrifices to Pele as well. So we were all trying to think of what we were going to do. Alex's go-to was always M&Ms, or whatever M&Ms were left after her 2-year-old, who was with us, ate them in the van and had crazy sugar hyper attacks. And so I had to decide what I wanted to do. And the whole experience had been really transformative for me in a lot of ways. Not only had I learned a lot about the earth sciences, but I had started to think about the earth itself and myself differently. Being out of my element, away from Ithaca, away from New England, away from everything that I knew, I was surrounded by sea turtles and volcanoes and carnivorous plants and the native Nene geese, which are basically just Canadian geese that got blown off course and then evolved claws instead of webbed feet. So cool. I started thinking about the earth as a system for the first time. And under Alex's guidance, I began to see how the different parts of the Hawaiian Islands work together, and the earth in general. On Hawaii, the lava creates the land, and the plants and animals that live on the land adapt to their conditions, adapt to their surroundings. The people who settled Hawaii interpreted the world around them and came up with stories to try to explain and to honor the environment in which they lived. And then there was me, a newcomer, trying to figure it all out. How do these disparate parts of the Earth system fit together? How are they connected? And so I watched ferns grow out of black lava, and I watched the Nene geese with their clawed feet climb over volcanic rocks. And I decided that during a time in my life when I was not only learning so much but feeling so much, that the appropriate offering to Pele would be a poem. So we hiked back out to the flows. We took out our rock hammers and our heat shields and our thermally insulated gloves, and we pulled off fresh pieces of lava and watched them cool. And I moved away from the group and took out a square of notebook paper on which I had written my poem, and I placed it on a red-hot glowing tongue of lava where it quickly turned to ash and smoke. I copied it down first, so I'm going to read it to you now. This is the only part where I get to cheat. An offering. You are Pele, the reason behind flame. With each sway of your hips, the raw land unfurls in constant blazing procreation. You push forth breath from infinite lungs, thin shrouds of sulfur steam that leak through the places where your fingertips push up against the hanging earth above. Your tongues of melted stone rasp and roll slow against those stilled below. And from this novel land emerge the gray-branched lichens, the bladed green ferns, the needled red flower of Ohia. In time, all of your fire is erased. Only iron earth remains to be sloughed off into the gape of the constant sea. A few years later in graduate school, I took a science writing course from the science writer Cornelia Dean, and one of the books that she had us read was called The Two Cultures by C.P. Snow. And The Two Cultures is a book about the divisions between the sciences and the humanities, divisions which only seem to grow wider since Snow first wrote the book in the 1950s. And so when I think about burning my poem in the lava, I think about the two cultures. I think about the poetry that we often deny ourselves as scientists for fear of ridicule, for fear of not being taken seriously, for fear of being seen as less than objective. And I think about the students who walk into my class and tell me that they're not science types. And I think about the lines that we draw around ourselves and that other people draw around us. I still have that piece of lava, although it's gotten broken after one too many rough apartment moves. And while my life since has not been perfect, it has been pretty wonderful. So I'd like to thank Pele for accepting my offering. Thank Alex for showing me how enriching a life spent teaching about and learning about the earth can be. And to both of them for helping me see how to bridge the two cultures within myself. And for reminding me that the lines that we draw around ourselves and others can be erased, and not only by lava. And finally, I would like to thank my husband, who, not knowing this story, gave me a shovel for my 34th birthday. Thank you.